Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Vivian Schiller, president and CEO of NPR, resigned this morning. Yesterday, in a hidden camera video, another NPR executive was caught on tape criticizing conservatives, and he said the network would be better off without federal money. Joining me in the studio to talk about what the latest developments mean for public broadcasting and efforts to eliminate federal funding, Patrick Butler. He's president and CEO of the Association of Public Television Stations, and NPR ombudsman Alicia Shepard. Later on in the hour, we'll hear from others who are very involved in the works of public broadcasting and otherwise know a great deal. Joining us first by phone is Tucker Carlson. He is the founder of the Conservative Daily Caller. Good morning, Tucker. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Diane.
How did you manage to break this story?
One of our reporters was speaking to the guy who shot the hidden camera video and learned of its existence, and we got it up first. We didn't do it. We didn't have any role in making it.
But and the fellow who was caught on tape is Ron Schiller, no relation to Vivian. What was he saying?
He was essentially doing what all fundraisers do, sucking up to a prospective donor. In this case, two men posing as representatives of a Muslim group related to the Muslim Brotherhood. And in the course of their lunch at Cafe Milano in Georgetown, he spoke dismissively of evangelical Christians and of conservatives and Republicans, saying that they are stupid and racist and uneducated, and basically repeating the kind of familiar liberal catechism about the right.
Tell me whether the tapes were actually vetted to verify that they were not altered.
They apparently were not altered. I mean, according to NPR, they weren't. I don't know what you mean by vetted.
Before
Taylor said what he said on the tape, I don't think anybody's claimed otherwise, unless I've missed it.
And you don't think that anybody put in dialogue that shouldn't have been there or that wasn't there to begin with?
I don't think anyone has made that claim, and I don't imagine that Vivian Schiller would have resigned had that been the case. Again, I may not be up on the latest, but I don't think anybody is making the claim that Mr. Schiller didn't say what he appears to say on the tape.
Why do you think the Daily Caller got it first?
Because our reporter happened to be talking to James O'Keefe, I think, is the real answer.
Tell us who James O'Keefe is.
James O'Keefe is the filmmaker, provocateur, guerrilla documentary guy who apparently set up this undercover video of the head of the NPR Foundation speaking to two men, as I said, posing as representatives of a Muslim foundation. He is not an employee of any news organization. He has his own foundation. He is conservative. His job is to some extent, drive liberals crazy. He's known for a couple other undercover tapes he's produced, most famously one in which he and a coworker, I guess, went in and to a bunch of Acorn offices posing as a pimp and prostitute and caused a great deal of trouble for Acorn. I didn't think that this was sort of, earth-shattering in its most basic revelation, which is that, somebody from the NPR Foundation dismisses conservatives out of hand. I mean, that's a pretty common view among people in news organizations, not just NPR. I know a lot of people who work at NPR, and I think a lot of them probably share that view too.
Tucker, I gather you actually do give money to your own station in Maine. Is that so?
Oh, yeah. I listen to NPR every day, driving to work, my nine-minute commute in Washington. I like Car Talk on the weekends. Yeah, I like NPR. That's not – and so look, the point – I mean, to the extent we were making a point, and we weren't really. We were just reporting what we saw as news, and I think it's proved to be news. But to the extent, you know, I have opinions on this, they are these. One, it's not a shock that a lot of people who work at NPR are liberal. Everyone knows that. I know that by my own experience. I don't think anyone would deny that. Or that, you know, that some of those liberal views are, you know, aggressive and dismissive of conservatives. The point is, and I would never argue that NPR is bad or shouldn't exist. Again, I like NPR. The question is whether it ought to take federal money, whether taxpayers ought to be coerced into supporting a news organization. And I think there's a lot of evidence that it causes NPR trouble, because the second you take federal money, then you're accountable to taxpayers.
Okay. Alicia Shepherd, the NPR ombudsman, is here with me. She's got a point to make.
Well, you asked the question about whether or not the tape had been vetted, and when I first saw Tucker Carlson's or the Daily Caller story, that was the absolute first question and to me to ask NPR to make sure that NPR wasn't reacting too quickly based on seeing this video. And I sent an email to Ron Schiller, and he said, yes, it had been heavily edited, but he said, I did say some of those quote-unquote stupid things. So I think that's one thing that has to happen with the news media all the time is you get these videos, you need to make sure they are what they are. With the tools that we have out there today, anything can be edited. There seemed to be one part where I thought, I'm wondering if Ron Schiller's really responding to that question. Regardless, he said what he said.
Pat Butler, what was your reaction to the video?
Well, I thought it was indefensible, inexcusable, reprehensible. I mean, it goes against the ethic of everything we try to do in public broadcasting. What we try to do is to be as civil, as balanced, as fair, as comprehensive as we can be in the coverage of news and everything else that we do. And what Mr. Schiller was saying is exactly the opposite of that.
But would you agree with Tucker Carlson that what he heard was not a shock, that NPR is presumed to be more liberal, and that Ron Schiller was being more aggressive than usual, perhaps?
Well, I do disagree with Tucker's premise here. The American people, who are the ultimate judge of these matters, consider NPR and PBS to be the most trusted sources of news and information in the country by a considerable margin. And that goes across the ideological spectrum from liberal to moderate to conservative. And those same poll numbers have stood up for several years across many people's different surveys. So I do question the premise that we are automatically perceived as liberal by everybody. That's clearly not true. I mean, there is a coterie of people here in Washington who feel that way, and I understand that, but that's not the way the American people feel.
Go ahead, Alicia.
Can I add that it's actually insulting because the journalist at NPR and in all news, mainstream news organizations are first and foremost professionals, and what they believe or their personal agendas or the issues that they support are not at the forefront of their doing journalism. Every journalist, and all three of us have opinions, but when we go out there and report, we try to be fair and get all the information.
Okay.
But I just said one thing.
Sure. Go ahead.
I had a show at PBS for a year, so I have some sense of the internal dynamics, not a world expert, but know a little about it. And I would say I met very, very, in fact, I can't think of one person I met in the PBS universe who wasn't personally liberal politically, and the same goes for the many people I know at NPR. I agree that most people in public broadcasting are honest and try to keep their political views out of their news coverage. On the other hand, if every single employee at NPR and PBS was from Provo, Utah, and had gone to BYU, would it affect the news coverage? Of course it would. Whenever you get a large group of people who think the same, in general, and have generally the same assumptions about life and culture, it's going it's going to produce a cast to the coverage. And I don't think any serious person disputes that. As to the point that they're the most trusted news organizations, I've said, and I'll say it again, I listen to NPR and like it. On the other hand, PBS is far from the most watched news network. Fox is, actually. And so, you know, you can ask people all you want, but watching behavior is always a more accurate measure than asking opinions. And people, more people watch Fox, so what does that tell you?
I don't want to get into a debate about numbers, but here's what I do not understand. Why did this NPR executive go into that meeting, go into a luncheon without vetting the people he was going to meet for lunch? Pat Butler, you've said this happened at PBS.
Well, I'm advised by PBS executives that that Mr. O'Hara or one of his representatives, Mr. O'Keefe had made the same kind of entree to PBS, but that PBS, in its due diligence, discovered that this was more of a scam than a bona fide offer, and declined to participate in his initiative. I'm very sorry that NPR didn't do the same kind of due diligence in advance.
And here we that's are. The question for you, Alicia. How could this have happened?
When Ron Schiller was announced as the new fundraiser 18 months ago, he came with a stellar reputation, and you know, almost people believed he would be the savior of public radio. And you have to question his judgment. You meet with complete strangers and you blab your personal opinions in public. You don't think that maybe you're going to be a target when you're at NPR?
Alicia Shepard, she's NPR's Ombudsman. Short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking about the resignation, if not the forced ouster, of NPR CEO Vivian Schiller. She resigned after a video went viral showing that the chief fundraiser for NPR, whose name is also Schiller but has no relationship to Vivian, was caught on videotape talking in very disparaging comments about conservatives and talking to people he assumed, without having previously checked, presumed were going to be large donors to NPR. And joining us now is Brooke Gladstone. She's host of WNYC's On the Media. Good morning to you, Brooke.
Good morning, Diane.
I would presume you are as taken aback as we all are.
Well, I can't say that I'm shocked, maybe just shocked. The fact is that Vivian Schiller found herself in a situation that she'd had no experience in handling. She never was used to handling the kind of scrutiny that comes with this job. She wasn't a CEO before, much less a head of a nonprofit, much less the head of a membership organization that is steeped in so much seething politics. And although she did a great deal that was positive for National Public Radio. She didn't have the keenest ear when it came to dealing with the public and dealing with the kind of political intrigue in which NPR keeps finding itself in Washington.
Would you agree with that, Pat Butler?
Well, I do think it takes a certain set of special skills to run NPR, particularly in the environment we're dealing with now. But I was with Vivian at the National Press Club on Monday, where she was talking about the news coverage of NPR having improved, the audience reach having improved, the financial strength having improved over the 2 years of her tenure here. And I think those are great accomplishments that ought not be lost in this conversation.
Oh, goodness. I entirely agree. Not only has the news coverage increased enormously, but NPR is on a more solid financial footing. She reached out to the member stations and created a lot of really wonderful partnerships. She ushered NPR into the digital age, made it a leader with a brilliant website and a variety of other platforms. I think her legacy at NPR is really solid. I was just going back to the off-the-cuff remark after the Juan Williams affair and various other times where in public she spoke as a human being rather than as a politician and has had to pay the price.
Brooke, I'd love it's Alicia Shepard. My take on this, and you've been at NPR a long time before you went over to On the Media. NPR is only 40 years old, and I think they've existed in a quote-unquote love vacuum for a long time and been the media darling, and now they're playing in the big leagues, and I don't think they were prepared for that, and I think that's why we've seen what's happened in the last 5 months. What do you think?
I wouldn't interpret the situation that way. I think that they have grown, that NPR has grown step by step over the decades and has become a major source of news for very many people, especially as other sources of this kind of news have become much shakier and less comprehensive. I think that it's the political environment
yes.
that has become more and more polarized. And I don't think that NPR is suddenly playing in the big leagues. I think that the New York Times and the major networks and any news organization that purports to be really down the middle, fair, finds itself subject to these kinds of charges and scrutiny all the time, NPR all the more so because its member stations receive public funding. Let's make it clear that NPR, a lot of people misunderstand. They think NPR is public radio. It certainly is the most prominent face of public radio. But that money goes to member stations all across the country.
Of course.
And they pay some of that in dues to NPR. But it's not a major source of NPR's funding or even of the station's funding.
You know, you talk about the question of a good ear, and you think about the former CEO of NPR.
Kevin Close, yes.
Kevin Close, who had a very clear sense of the political fragility in which NPR existed. Wouldn't you agree, Brooke?
I would agree that Kevin Close was very careful never to say anything that was controversial, and in his last few years, I think, was almost invisible.
When I said that they existed in a love vacuum, I think that they weren't prepared to deal with the kind of pushback that they got. So when the decision to hastily fire Juan Williams was made, I think everyone within the corporate level was taken aback by the reaction. And the same thing with the John Stewart rally, which there was a lot of blowback on. And that's what I meant by just, yes, they have certainly grown in the last 10 years.
And the fact of the matter is that the political climate in this country has changed
dramatically,
and therefore people need to be aware and need to be thoughtful about what they say, whether they're on camera, on microphone, or just having lunch at Cafe Milano, Pat?
Well, this is the conundrum that I just find fascinating here. We are living in very complicated times. This deficit at the federal level is just overwhelming. You know, people are reasonably looking for everything they can find to cut. But because the times are so complicated, because the world is so dangerous, I mean, the fact that we have programs like yours on public radio give the American people, as citizens of this great democracy, the kind of information and perspective that they need to make the decisions they have to make this democracy work. It's essential to me. I mean, we've been told by some of our friends in Congress that we're a luxury that people can't afford anymore, and that's just not true. I think we need what you are doing and what public radio and television are doing more now than ever before.
All right. We're going to open the phones and hear from some of our own listeners. First to Erin, who's in Springfield, Missouri. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you for taking my call.
Surely.
I have two points I want to make, not really questions per se, but points. And the first one is that in light of Mr. O'Keefe's track record with editing videos, anybody who would take a video that he made on faith as being complete without vetting it and checking it out and making sure that it was actually valid, that would just be foolish in light of his track record of editing things out that don't accord with the viewpoint that he's trying to push. And the number two thing I would kind of ask is, when did it become a firing offense for people to have opinions? I mean, this man was meeting with these people at a private luncheon with no expectation of being recorded. I mean, is it really required now for every employee of NPR to believe that every minute of every day they could be recorded and anything they say could be broadcast to the media? I mean, I think, and get them fired? I mean, I think, you know, it's to the point now where if you're a liberal person, you're not supposed to express your opinions in public for fear of having something happen to you if you work for a news organization. I kind of wonder if you mic the cafeteria at Fox News, what kind of things you might hear about liberals that would be just as offensive.
Alicia.
Well, first of all, Ron Schiller and the other woman in the development office were in a public restaurant representing NPR.
Exactly.
And Ron Schiller said, these are my personal opinions. Well, that's fine, but would you go and sit down in a restaurant and share all your personal opinions with a complete stranger? And the other thing is that we have to realize now, whether we like it or not, we live in a society where the mic is always on, and anything can and will be used against you.
Brooke.
And I just want, you know, young people in particular to realize that with all the internet, Facebook, Twitter.
Sure, of course. Brooke, do you want to come in?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have to say that there certainly seems to be a double standard for organizations that that try to report down the middle, like NPR, proving a kind of a purity of thought that doesn't seem to bother people at Fox News. You know, you've got Roger Ailes, who is alleged to be caught on tape suborning perjury, and nobody is firing that guy. On the other hand, I certainly don't want to liken NPR to Fox News. What I'm saying is that in response to her question, this is an incredibly sensitive period. On the other hand, NPR gets criticized when it appears to overreact to political sensitivity. I mean, the firing of Juan Williams is a case in point. If we'd heard all of his remark, we would have heard that he was using himself as an example of a kind of xenophobia that he wanted to get over and he wanted other people to get over. So it was as taken out of context as the Cheryl Sherrod's, you know, Sherrod's tape, the Agriculture Department staffer that was summarily fired by the Obama administration, who did not hear all of that tape. So there is a tendency for people to rush to judgment.
Right. So, Brooke, in your opinion, was Juan Williams fired without good cause?
I wasn't a fan, personally, I wasn't a huge fan of Juan Williams' But in this particular instance, this was not a firing offense, in my view. This was a reflex.
All right.
Well, first, I want to make sure that I am, as the ombudsman, I am independent of NPR. I'm not speaking for NPR. But as somebody who had to deal with complaints about Juan Williams going back to October 2007 when I started, NPR did a very poor job handling that. Vivian Schiller said it the other day. There was a long list of issues that NPR had with Juan Williams, and a better way would have been to let his contract run out, and they should have explained it was not based on that one remark.
All right, and joining us now is David Edwards. He's general manager of WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. He's chair of the NPR board. Good morning to you, Dave.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Thank you for joining us. Talk about your own reaction, not only to the video itself, but to the resignation of Vivian Schiller.
Well, Diane, let me start by commenting briefly about the video. When I saw it yesterday, and I realized that I was only seeing an excerpt of what I've been told was a two-hour meeting, at first it was very difficult for me to even watch the entire video, and I had to force myself to watching it because the comments that were being made as they were being presented to that video were, I found, so troublesome and so counter to everything that I have ever believed in throughout my career in public broadcasting. I know it's not what my colleagues on the board or colleagues at NPR felt, and I was incredibly troubled by what I saw. The board obviously needed to have a conversation with our CEO, Vivian Schiller. Vivian, I must say, has accomplished so much during her tenure within the organization, leading NPR through a period of great economic difficulty for the organization. She brought this incredible vision and energy to NPR and to our industry. We had to have a frank conversation with her last night about not only what transpired with this particular incident, with the way things have been going, and with the way in which NPR needed to position itself and lead going forward. We felt that because of the series of unfortunate events that have occurred in recent months and most recently, that it all became a distraction to the organization. We felt that it hindered her ability to lead, and so Vivian, was very careful in saying to the board that she wanted to make sure that we could do what was right for the organization and our industry, and so the board reluctantly moved forward with accepting her resignation.
David Edwards, he's general manager of WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. He's chair of the NPR board, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Dave, was there no alternative but that Vivian Schiller leave?
We felt it was the right thing to do going forward. While we certainly were appreciative of everything that she had done, we felt that, as I said, that going forward we didn't want to have any distractions so that we could deal with the challenges that faced us going forward. So we thought it was the appropriate thing to do. We are very, very fortunate to have a leadership team in place at NPR so that going forward, we have a team in place that can carry forward with all the initiatives that have been in place. Our interim CEO has been Senior Vice President and General Counsel of the organization. Joyce Slocum, in that role, has been involved in every major project that has been underway. And so we are feeling very confident that with her leadership and with the leadership of other members of the senior management team, we will move forward.
You talk about the challenges ahead. How do you feel that both this video and Vivian Schiller's resignation will affect the thinking of members of Congress who want to zero out funding for public broadcasting?
And, you know, all of the controversies that have been surrounding NPR over the last 6 months or so have certainly complicated our fight to maintain federal funding. Just a few weeks ago, we announced an initiative between NPR and the Association of Public Television Stations to form a public media association. It's an initiative which we thought was extremely important that would allow us to continue to make the case for federal funding for public broadcasting. That initiative moves forward. We will continue to be aggressive in stating our case. We have a very, very important message that we need to continue to convey to members of Congress and to the American people as to why the investment of federal dollars is absolutely critical to the lifeblood, as the lifeblood, to many of our member stations around the country. Without that investment of federal funding, many of our stations are vulnerable. They are at risk of being shut down, going dark. And in many of those communities, those public radio and public TV stations are absolutely the connection that those communities have with the rest of the world. We're often surprised to hear that in this time of multiple
All right.
options.
I'm afraid we're out of time. David Wirtz, he's General Manager, WUWM, Chair of the NPR Board.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. By MetLife Foundation, committed to promoting healthy families and good nutrition, on the web at metlife.org. And by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need, on the web at rwjf.org. This is NPR.
There was a time when I thought of you.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Jimmy Dale Gilmore and listen to music from his forthcoming CD of string band songs called Heirloom Music. Gilmore lives in Austin, where he'll perform next week at the South by Southwest Music Festival. Join us.
Everything. When you left me, my poor heart was broken. Our romance seemed all...
Welcome back. We're talking about the resignation of NPR CEO Vivian Schiller, what that means for public radio, certainly, but also in the larger sense, what it means for a reflection on public broadcasting at a time when Congress is considering certainly downsizing, perhaps even eliminating funding for public broadcasting. And joining us now is Stephen Moore. He's a member of the Wall Street Journal's editorial board. Good morning, Stephen. Thanks for joining
Hi,
us.
Hi, Diane.
What did you make of Vivian Schiller's firing, her resignation, and the videotaping?
Well, I think it probably had to be done, the firing. I agree with Dave, and I appreciated his comments, by the way. I watched that video yesterday, and he said that he was deeply troubled by it. I, as a conservative, was deeply offended by it. The kind of characterization of Tea Party folks as being kind of unenlightened and anti-intellectual and racist, I thought was just offensive. And the real issue, I think, right now, Diane, is this issue of what's going to happen to the funding of NPR. My belief, and you know, I've always appreciated, I love being on your show. You've had me on many times. I've always appreciated that. I'm a contributor to public radio and WAMU in Washington. But I do think that this is something at a time when we have $1.6 trillion of deficits, there are things we just can't afford any longer. And this is something that has been on the chopping block. It was back on the chopping block in 1995 and 96, you may recall.
We I had
the debate back then.
I do.
And so I want to see this funded privately. The way I put it is I want national public radio to become national private radio.
And Patrick Butler, what do you think?
Well, I think if you're going to target public broadcasting to solve the deficit crisis, you would have to eliminate us 1,000 times to reduce the deficit from $1.6 trillion to $1.3 trillion. So targeting us is not going to solve any deficit problem. There's a different agenda going on here. And the problem is that the remarks like Mr. Shiller made the other day obscure the fact that that people across the political spectrum value what we're doing in public broadcasting. There was a poll that that Peter Hart and Linda Duvall did just a week ago, which suggested that 79% of the American people either want public broadcasting funding continued or increased. And even among Tea Party members, self-identified Tea Party members, it's an even split between those who want to see it continue and those who don't.
Stephen Moore, what do you make of that?
You know, I've heard that argument for 20 years, Diane, and it's probably right that people appreciate shows like yours and appreciate NPR News and things like that. And my attitude is it's a fairly affluent, well-educated group of people who not just affluent and well-educated people, but a lot of people who have the financial means to support this. And Diane, I simply think that this should be funded with private dollars. I don't think it's appropriate to use public money at a time. Look, I understand that it's not a huge pot of money that public broadcasting gets, but we have to, you know, start prioritizing things. And the question is, you know, can the money that NPR gets, can that be better used for reducing our deficit or for other kinds of national priorities? And so I do think shows like yours and many of these affiliates will stay in business. They'll just have to go to people like George Soros. You know, when I give speeches, I always say, let George Soros fund NPR if it's so important.
Stephen Moore, let me ask you this. While I appreciate the fact that you have come on the program, that you do contribute to WAMU, I wonder about your feelings about stations out in the rural areas that perhaps do not have
right.
the support that WAMU has here in the Washington area. How are they going to stay in business?
You know, quite frankly, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert on that. I would hope that people from big cities like Washington and New York and Los Angeles would help contribute to keep those stations on the air if they're valuable. But, you know, the other thing that's changed so much in the last 20 years that I think is an argument against public broadcasting support is just that you have almost an infinite number of ways to get news and information now. You can, anybody in any town or any city can go on the internet and get virtually any radio station or TV station that they want. And in that kind of environment, it's not the kind of monopolistic environment for news that it once was when NPR and Corporation for Public Broadcasting first started.
At the same time, don't forget that rural areas may not be as completely wired to the internet as big cities like New York and Chicago. Oh, Alicia, I know you wanted to say something.
No, Brooke wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I was going to make actually a similar point to yours, Diane. The the idea that, you know, WAMU, which makes enough money to support its local news operation and do it very well, is not likely, as your guest suggests, to give money to a rural station. The rural stations, just like public schools, have to rely on their listeners and also from the help from government. And obviously, although you can go on the internet and access all kinds of radio and all kinds of news, the one kind among the many kinds of news that becomes less and less available is local news about the state house, local news about, you know, the state of the streets and the state of the local economy. These are the sorts of things that public radio at its best does.
All right.
And that is why it's been supported all of this time. I mean, as I said before, you have to remember that this money goes to the stations, not to NPR. And this
exactly.
really isn't about guy taking off his quote-unquote NPR hat in a Washington restaurant and shooting his mouth off.
All right. I want to bring in now Paul Farhi. He's a staff writer at The Washington Post. Good morning, Paul.
Hi, Diane.
Thanks for joining us. I know you were at David Edwards' press conference. Tell me about the reaction there.
Well, Dave is trying to put the best face on this, as you can imagine, and he's trying to say that this will help the system and public broadcasting move forward. I think what he is saying parenthetically is we are sending a message to Congress that we are dealing with this problem, and we've dealt with the problem by getting rid of the CEO of NPR.
Do you think that that's going to solve the problem?
I asked him that very question, and his answer was effectively that we hope so. They are, you know, NPR, public television, public radio are in a fight for their lives with Congress, and it's an extremely critical and sensitive time. This could not have happened at a worse time for public broadcasting, and so they are panicking, I guess. They are, you know, throwing the bodies overboard in an attempt to throw off the people who are out to get the funding. And this is their best response to it. You know, of course, the CEO has to take responsibility for everything, but I think anybody looking at this closely realizes that this is not Vivian Schiller's doing, that she is going to be sacrificed for the good of public broadcasting. And the real question is it going to do any good?
Yeah, and that's the question for Stephen Moore. What kind of a difference is the retirement, resignation, firing of Vivian Schiller going to make?
I would say, Diane, close to zero. I mean, I think most members of Congress don't even know who Diane Schiller is. And
you mean, you know, Vivian Schiller?
So I don't. I think it's kind of. I agree with this gentleman that she's sort of the sacrificial lamb here. But I think, you know, this fight is going to be really fought, I think, in the halls of Congress over the merits in the very argument that we've had on the air of whether we can afford this, whether it's the best use of taxpayer dollars. And one last point: the idea that I'll tell you this, I think a lot of Republicans are quite offended by the fact that NPR, as your previous guest was talking about, has this PR campaign now that is essentially being paid for with tax dollars to lobby for more tax dollars. I mean, I find that to be troubling.
Patrick Butler.
Well, just to be clear, the on-air appeals that are going on across the country in public television and radio stations are not funded by federal dollars. I mean, the way the system works is that for every dollar of federal funding, we generate about $6 in private funding from individual donors and foundations and corporations and such, and it's those funds that are being used to finance these on-air appeals.
That's true, but sir, I mean, look, money is fungible, and if you've got dollars that you can use for a public relations campaign, I think Republicans say, why don't you use that for the programming that you say is so much in jeopardy?
Well, we've been through this issue before in 1995,
right,
and 2005, and the GAO has investigated and found absolutely no fault with the way we are doing this appeal.
Alicia, you want to comment?
Well, I just think that this is an issue that has just gotten so complicated, and that, you know, the issue should be NPR's fight and public radio's fight in Congress and not be distracted by Vivian Schiller and Ron Schiller and Ellen Weiss
and
Ron
Williams.
But how can
it help it be?
Well, at least now, you know, Viv, and unfortunately, because I do think that she did an incredible job in turning the ship around at NPR, but that's not on the table. I'm not going to be getting calls, fire Vivian Schiller, because she's been fired. And, well, you know, fire Ron Schiller. They've been fired.
He's left.
Yes.
He's left. Brooke Gladstone, do you believe that letting Vivian Schiller go is going to make a difference in what you do? Has this whole report sort of affected your thinking about how you'll go forward in reporting on the media?
Are you saying, is it going to create a chilling effect for on the media?
You betcha.
If it does, we have we have completely lost our raison d'etre, if that's the case. And we will continue reporting as we've always reported. We really have no choice. That's our brief. NPR has to continue reporting the way it's always reported. Let's face it, it's been on the chopping block, public broadcasting, since the 70s, since it first started doing the Watergate hearings. This is a political issue. It's not a financial issue. It will always be a touchy issue in Congress, and there'll be an opportunity every time there is a Republican majority to cut it. On Friday, Senators Jim DeMint and Tom Coburn introduced legislation to cut it to follow the Republican House, and so it goes. I can't change what we do. I mean, there's no reason to exist if my existence is threatened by the political environment.
And Paul Farhi, do you agree with Brooke Gladstone that this is more political than financial?
Well, you can easily see that the people who want to cut the funding are Republicans. The people who have always wanted to maintain it are Democrats. You can draw your own conclusion from that. Listen, it's also a symbolic cultural issue here. There is a feeling that NPR, PBS are elitist. They appeal to an elite audience. That's not really true, but that's always the way this has been cast. Going back to the mid-90s with Newt Gingrich and zeroing out public broadcasting. So political and cultural, it's a wedge issue. It's one of those issues in which you can define us and them. And conservatives have used it very effectively for a very long time.
But Diane, can I say one thing on
sure.
that? I don't think too many liberals listening to this show would be too happy if their tax dollars were used to finance Fox News. I think that NPR has improved in terms of its fairness in its coverage, but I still believe that it has a liberal bias. And so there is a reason why conservatives and Republicans have had their knives out for this for 25 years, and it's precisely because
now, Steve Moore, don't forget that at one point the Diane Rehm show was in the gun sight of Ken Tomlinson for having too many liberals on. And the liberals and the conservatives were counted up, for heaven's sake. And absolutely, you know, I really resented that because we go to such lengths every single day to make
right.
sure that
Diana,
what
I'm
we do.
I'm not talking about your show. I mean, you're...
What,
you're
you know, it's funny. Everybody says that. All of the people who criticize NPR and public radio say to me, oh, but not your show. But my show is part of what represents public broadcasting.
Oh, no, Diane, you're one of the good ones.
Well, we
no, actually, what I just want to say that Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, which is a liberal watchdog group, has often counted up the talking heads across national
sure.
public radio and found that right and right of center talking heads far outnumber the left ones. This is also true in the major newspapers and certainly on the networks.
Well,
if, in fact, most reporters tend to be liberal-leaning in their own political convictions, they tend to overcompensate enormously in the voices that they put on the air.
All right, Pat, go ahead.
We just have to get the politics right here. Public broadcasting has been in business for more than 40 years through Republican and Democratic administrations, Republican and Democratic Congresses.
And I've been here 32.
And you've been here almost all that time, and it's just not correct to characterize this as a partisan issue. There are Republicans to this day who will vote with us to continue supporting public broadcasting on both the House and Senate side, and I will not accept that characterization that this is Republicans versus Democrats.
Alicia?
Hey, well, it's also a false equivalency to count up the number of guests because it ignores
exactly
the fact of what is happening in the news. Right now you have a Republican-dominated House, and they're doing a lot. They're going to be more Republicans on NPR. So to count up how many Republicans and Democrats would not show anything.
Paul Farhi?
Well, yeah, I agree. On the other hand, the culture wars are the culture wars, and NPR tends to be the symbol of the Republican ideology, you know, the Republican opposition. And it is true, and someone said to me, another thing about this is you are more likely to get a conservative listener to NPR than you are likely to get, than you will have conservative viewers of Fox News. There are more conservatives listening to NPR than are watching Fox News.
All right.
I find that interesting.
And that's got to be the last word, Paul Farhi of The Washington Post, Stephen Moore of The Wall Street Journal, Patrick Butler, CEO of the Association of Public Television Stations, and Alicia Shepard. She's the NPR ombudsman. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for
My
listening,
pleasure.
All. I'm Diane Rehm.